This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
All right. Welcome to the Sub 70 podcast. This is Jay. Just wanted to give a quick introduction for this episode of the podcast. Our guest on this episode is professional golfer, PGA Tour winner, Ryan Armour. Not to be confused with the sub 70 local attorney, Ryan Armour. Jason and Ryan talked about Ryan's time at Ohio State playing college golf. Also talked about his time on the mini tours, moving over to the web tour, and his recent success over the last several years on the PGA Tour, including his win at Sanderson Farms. They talked about some other topics as well, including club technology changes and how that has impacted the game, some of the things that he has seen firsthand as far as some of the younger players kind of learning to swing fast and hard, and then figuring out accuracy and short game and things like that later on. They also just talked about the Masters, did a little bit of a recap and both of their thoughts on, you know, what makes Augusta and the Masters such a special tournament, even when you're just watching it as a fan. So we would like to thank Ryan for his time. Very awesome talk. If you guys have any feedback, feel free to check us out on social media at GolfSub70. Here is the interview. Well, I would like to welcome PGA Tour winner to the Sub 70 podcast, Ryan Armour. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time today to do the podcast with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Chase. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm assuming you watched the Masters over the weekend. Even if you're not, you're, as a player, I'm sure you're still a fan. What was your thoughts on it, and what did you think of that the back nine on Sunday?
The Masters never fails to disappoint. I mean, they know how to set the course up, and, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's Thursday and Friday every year seems really, really difficult. And then all of a sudden they get those hole locations and spots on the weekend where they add some excitement for the fans. And it's just, they just know what they're doing. They get those roars going on the weekend. And when Jordan holed that putt on 16, you know, I was kind of being a fan there. That kind of jumped me off. I wasn't cheering for Jordan or, you know, or cheering for Patrick. But, it, you know, it's just like, oh, my God, is he going to do this? And it was just exciting.
Yeah, it really is theater. I mean, there's not a better back nine to have somebody go low or somebody to make a mistake. It's just the greatest nine holes to watch for a major championship where it's all on the line and you can go low or you can make a mistake. It's great drama, it truly is.
Yeah, it is. And I think another thing is we're all so familiar with it. That's what kind of takes away from the other majors that get rotated, you know, around. You know, we're used to seeing the hole locations at Augusta, and we're used to, you know, going back in our memory bank, whether it was Nicklaus or Woods or, you know, whoever hitting these incredible shots, and, you know, they're replayed over and over, and, you know, you can go replay that in your mind, which I think is what adds to the lure of Augusta.
Totally agree with you. Well, first off, I want to give you a delayed huge congratulations for your win at the Sanderson Farms Championship in this current 2018 season. What's been the best part about being a PGA Tour winner so far from your experience?
You know, it's probably access. I mean, you know, I'd played out of the web category 4 of the 5 years I played on tour. And that's a hard category to play out of. If you don't get off to a really hot start, you're going long stretches without getting in very many events. And some of them, you know, are opposite field events. And so you got less FedEx Cup points. And, you know, I think the access and being able to say, okay, I'm going to play 3 in a row, then I'm going to take 1 off, then I'm going to play 3 more in a row, and I'm going to take 2 off. And being able to set that schedule is so key, especially for me. I got, you know, I got 2 boys that are 9 and 6, and I want to be home and see some things. And, but you know, I to answer your question fully, I think it's the access number one and being able to set your schedule.
And that was going to be my follow-up. I can't imagine how much easier it has to be for you to be able to pick the golf courses you want to play and how many weeks do you want to be on out there than be back home. And, you know,
yeah.
It has to be a huge advantage to be able to set the schedule of the way you want to that's in your best interest.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it allows me to, you know, I'm not going to nitpick on courses because, I mean, you know, I've played, I'm not the longest hitter on tour, but I've played well at long golf courses and I've played poorly at short courses. So you never know when that week you're going to be on. You just keep doing, trying to do the right things that you and your instructor are working on. And, but in allowing myself to rest, I know I can like say, okay, this course, I have really never played well there. So I'm just going to take that week off. If my wife wants to plan a vacation, maybe I'll take 2 weeks off and just find that stretch where I've never really played well at certain golf courses. And it just, it alleviates a lot of problems that may come scheduling wise.
Yeah. The benefits of being a PGA Tour winner, right? Right.
Right.
There,
there it is right there.
Well, on a side note, we have been, and we're out in Sycamore, Illinois here, and a group of us at our club, we've been following your career for years because one of my best friend's name is Ryan Armour.
Mentions crazy.
To your Twitter. And he was going to do the podcast, even though I normally do him, but he's in court this week with a case. Uh-huh. So he's an attorney. So for years, we would text him and be like, you're T7. It is incredible that you are this good of an attorney and play the PGA Tour at the same time. So we've been watching this ride. Like, so when you won, for us especially, this is like a sidebar, but we were thrilled for you because we've been watching this process for a long time. So that was really cool for us to see just as golf fans. But we really started noticing in 2017, you really started playing some darn good golf. And what changes kind of happened in your game? I heard the one part that you softened the shafts up a little, but what did you sort of find?
It probably started about a year ago where I just kind of, my instructor up at Baldestrol, Jason Carbone, I just kind of went to him and said, you know, kind of sick of being average, you know, yeah, average, I can make a living and da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, can you put a process together that gets us to where we need to be, you know, to not be elite, but to be good and contend multiple weeks out here, you know, not just contend when the putter's hot. And, you know, he put a process in place and I believed in it because I believe in him. First of all, he's worked with me for a number of years and, you know, we did some stuff where my leg work was not doing what it should be doing to try and elevate the golf ball. And I kind of hit a low shot. I don't hit very far and kind of just maneuver my way around the golf course. Well, now I got a little more, I got some different shots. I'm able to play into some tight hole locations, you know, adding some, you know, verticality with it. And it helps. It helps get closer to holes. It helps get you more, you know, scoring opportunities. And I mean, I'm not saying it's on every week. It's not. It's definitely a long, long process to try and correct. But, you know, just believing in that and then being okay with who I am. Like, okay, I realize, you know, all these new drivers come out. I should be able to hit it 400 by now with all they tout, you know, 10, 15 yards longer every day. But that's just not the case. You know, I'm going to hit it 280 and that's it. I just got to find a different way to score. So we work hard on our wedges. We work hard on our short game and just believe in doing that. And, you know, some weeks you're awesome at it and some weeks you're not.
Well, you were really consistent, like I said, for the PGA Tour events you got in 17, you played well, but you still had to go into the web.com finals,
right?
Those last three events, but you played really great in those and you had a, you know, I had a chance to win one of the events, but pretty easily wrapped up your card.
Yeah.
So when that process was over last fall and you knew you were exempt for the next season, did that really kind of free you up a little bit to kind of, you know, take that next step, which happened at Sanderson?
I don't know if that freed me up so much as, you know, good play becomes habitual just as bad play becomes habitual. you know, I mean, it's starting in July. I started making a lot of cuts on tour last July in the 17 season, and I didn't string four together to get really good finishes, but I saw, you know, a glimpse of like, okay, this is starting to work. And then all of a sudden at Sedgefield, I finished fourth. And, you know, if Henrik doesn't go crazy, he'd probably have a chance to win there. And then I was able to carry that, you know, right away into the Webb Finals at Ohio State's course, which I have never played well there since Mr. Nicholas redesigned it, and which absolutely baffles me. But, having a chance to win there, and then I contended in the other two I did play, and it kind of faded on the weekend. I don't know if it might have been fatigue or whatever, but I don't know if it alleviated pressure getting through it, but it just kind of solidified, like, okay, you are playing good. You can go do this.
And then when you get to the Sanderson, you're playing well and the trend line's going the right way. What was the thought process, or lack of a better word, pressure, that going into Sunday, you were right there for the win and you played great on Sunday? You hit shots when you need to hit them. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be so satisfying to know you've been playing well and now you finally got over that hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, when you get done, you're like, did I really do this? But, you know, it's weird. Like, that Sunday, I was probably more jittery Saturday than Sunday. I don't know
really?
Why.
That's interesting.
But like getting through that jittery Saturday day allowed, you know, it's like, okay, I got through that. This is going to be I'm not saying it's going to be a breeze, but if you continue to hit fairways and you continue to hit greens, it's going to be really hard to catch me because I'm not going to go and three putt six or seven greens. So if I just, you know, stuck to that plan of, you know, keeping it in play and hitting it in the center of the greens, that was the game plan starting Sunday that Casey Kellogg, my caddy, and I discussed. Like, we're not changing anything. We're not going to, you know, play ultra conservative. When I have green light hole locations and green light, you know, numbers, we're still going to hit aggressive shots. I go, we may back off when I don't have, you know, the perfect number. We may just hit those to the middle of the green, 25, 30 feet, and two putt. And my thought process was, if I don't make bogeys, it's going to be really hard to catch me.
Did your win on the web.com tour in 16 of going really low over that weekend, 65, 64, was that also something you could kind of look back and say, yes, I've done this before at a really high level and I can get the job done?
Yeah, a little bit. I wouldn't say I could draw too many parallels because on that weekend I was chasing. I mean, I was, you know, I was trying to birdie every hole I played. So it was a little different mentality, you know, when you're coming from behind than when you're ahead. And, you know, when I was chasing, it was just like, all right, I'm going to go birdie every hole and see what happens. But like, you know, coming, when you're starting ahead, it's just like, okay, in the back of your head, you are like, okay, don't be too aggressive and screw this up and shortside yourself. And I mean, the greens in Mississippi are some of the fastest we play all year. So, you know, short-siding yourself there is not a good idea.
Yeah, so it's a fine line of play. You can't play too conservative because, you know, the guys are going to – there's great players chasing you. Yet
right.
Yeah, it's a fine line. Do you go conservative, but you're going to get passed, but you don't want to make a crazy mistake either.
And
it's probably.
I mean, even though it's a long golf course at 7,400, I still had enough – it's par 72. So I knew for sure I had four wedges in my hand with the par fives. And then I had other wedges in my hand because I was aggressive that week with the driver off the tee because I was driving it so straight that I didn't hit very many fairways off the tee or like fairway woods off the tee. I hit a lot of drivers off the tee to give myself shorter clubs. So it allowed me to be a little more aggressive with the numbers I had. You know, I mean, if you have nine or eight iron in your hand, it's a lot easier to get close than six and fives.
Yeah, and drivers, I mean, when you're on with the driver and you can put that thing in play and other guys are having to hit hybrids or fairways off the tee, it's a huge
right.
advantage.
I agree.
Well, it's a great story from an inspiration standpoint to be in your 40s, to stick with it for that long and to get that win. It's truly inspirational, man. It really is. I mean, like I said, from us following you and you know, and what you did, it was cool even for your fans. Yeah, I do these podcasts and I'm, you know, got to put my podcast hat on, but it is. It's a great story of perseverance and mm-hmm. sticking through it. So it was awesome to see. It's a fantastic story.
Thank you. Who
introduced you to the game of golf, and how did you start playing?
It was my parents. I mean, my dad played, and my older brother, 7 years older than me, he played. And, you know, growing up in Ohio, it's kind of the same weather you have over there in Illinois. And, you know, we had seasons. I played all sports growing up, but as I got older towards middle school, I kind of dwindled those down to two. It was golf and basketball, and it was literally from Halloween to Easter, it was basketball season, and Easter to Halloween, it was golf season, and that's pretty much what I did. I mean, those two sports, and it just stuck with me. I mean, I enjoyed, I had no problem, you know, hey, Mom, can you drop me off at the course, when I was, like, in middle school. And, like, I had no problem waiting for my dad to come home from work and pick me up. I mean, I didn't mind staying there 5, 6, 7 hours.
What age did you start getting really, really good, where you thought, hey, a D1 scholarship might be in the future here?
Well, Coach Brown at Ohio State had, you know, contacted me when I was young. I mean, I was probably 7th or 8th grade. And then, you know, as I got, started playing more, and I got a little stronger through high school, you know, I kind of knew sophomore, junior year, like, I was going to play golf in college. I didn't know where or, you know, at what level. And then, you know, my junior year, everything kind of just took off, and played some really good golf in, you know, my junior and senior year of high school.
How was the experience at Ohio State? And then was there any other guys that you played with on that team who ended up having a professional career as well when you were there?
Ohio State was awesome. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Coach Brown was great. My teammates were awesome. You know, just the experience of being at that university that, you know, I mean, athletics are a big deal there. I mean, it's a not just, you know, football, but, I mean, they care about every sport. So, I mean, it was truly a great experience. And as far as, you know, other teammates, I tell you what, it's funny. So it would be my junior year in college there. There was the reigning European amateur champion on my team, the reigning Canadian amateur champion on my team, and the reigning U.S. Pub Links champion on my team. And I'm the only one still left playing. So it's just funny how things work out. And you speak about perseverance and, you know, the willingness. You know, I was talking to another instructor out here at Bay Hill. We were having lunch, just guy I've known through the years and pretty prominent instructor. And, you know, he was talking to me about some stuff, and he's just like, you know what you have that a lot of these young kids don't have? The willingness to get knocked down. Like, you just get knocked down, you just brush it off and get right back up. And I think that what, you know, I didn't think about it until he said it. And I think that's what it is. Like, it never bothered me to fail a little bit. Like, I learned through my failures.
Right, like, so any good player, you can take it one of two ways, right? You can take that and get better, or you can have it, you know, for lack of a better word, crush you. And obviously, with your career, I mean, you kept getting better and better and better as you went along. So
it's, yeah, I just proof of it. You know, I think, you know, it's better to go out there and fail 50 times and then succeed one than it is to, you know, fail once and then you're done.
When you were at Ohio State, did you ever get to meet Mr. Nicklaus? Was he kind of at all?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't there a lot, but you did meet him, especially if we ever went over to Muirfield and he hosted us. He would be around. He was really busy that time, you know, at that age. So that would have been, you know, about, you know, 20 years ago or so. And he was still building a lot of golf courses. Right. He was still playing the Champions Tour. So, I mean, he was jet setting all over the world, building stuff, and then coming back, playing, you know, two events, and then going back overseas to build more stuff. So he was a very, very busy man at that stage.
So then you turned pro in 99, and what tours did you go out there and try to craft your game?
So I didn't turn pro until, like, literally right before Q school in 99. I just kind of... I don't know if I want to say was a lazy college kid, because I So I played 4 years at Ohio State, but it took me two more quarters to graduate. So my eligibility was up, but I stayed in school to get my degree. And so I did that. And then from March till about September, I kind of just played a lot of golf around Akron and Columbus. And then I was just like, all right, let's go do this. And I went to Q school and kind of got my butt kicked, like really, really got my butt kicked. And then in 2000, a bunch of us moved to Orlando and, you know, fresh out of the gate, I think it was called the Teardrop Tour at the time. So in 2000, like pretty much my first mini tour event, I come out and finish third. I'm like, all right, this is great.
It's easy, right?
Well,
easy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not easy.
Exactly.
And, you know, it almost would have been better if I had missed like six cuts in a row instead of playing good right at the beginning. But so, and then, you know, I just battled mini tours from 99, well, actually 2001, 2002. And then 2002, at the end of the year, I went to Q school again and I'm shooting 19 under down at Heron Bay to win first stage. And then I shoot 11 under at Orange County National at second, and I missed by one.
Yeah, it's a fine line.
Well, I get done, I'm like, I just shot 30 under for eight rounds at Q school, and I have nowhere to play again. I'm like, I don't know if this is for me. So I went back up to Akron at the time, and I was actually just sitting at this restaurant, and this guy came up to me and, you know, it was like, noticed who I was. Like, hey, are you Brian Armour? And I was like, yeah. And he's just like, what are you doing here? I'm like, what do you mean? And he's just like, it's middle of winter. Why aren't you in Florida or somewhere playing golf or overseas? And I'm like, well, so I just told him the story about what I shot at Q school and had nowhere really to play. And he goes, oh, we'll fix that. So this guy put together like this partnership for 3 years, about five, six guys got together, and like I had all the funding I needed for like 3 years. So, I mean, I owe a lot to those guys and I give them thanks all the time. And, you know, so starting, so that was the end of 02. So 03, then, you know, I had all this funding. I went down, moved to Jupiter, played the Golden Bear Tour, finished like third or fourth on that money list. And then that rolled straight into Q school and got status on the web. And kind of since that year, I've played nonstop on the web or PGA Tour.
Looking back at those mini tour days, and I was talking to Ben Curtis about this, and you can almost like hear it in his voice, like there's a part of it where it's like you don't miss, he didn't miss it, but it was a, you know, it's kind of like a fun stage in your life. Looking back at it with like a positive spin to it of hanging out with the guys and traveling by car, there's got to be some great stories, and it had to make you a better player, kind of grinding through there, right? Like it has to be like a rite of passage at some level, correct?
Well, it was unbelievable. It was like, golf was your life. I mean, you did nothing else. You literally hung out with golf friends and you would find lighted, you know, chipping and putting greens and go gamble at night. And, you know, you might have a 12 pack with you at the time and everybody would sit there and be gambling and drinking. And I mean, you had your whole kind of 3-4 months that you were living together in the winter were revolving around these kind of Orlando days and nights that you would just play golf all day and then you would chip and putt at night. And it was funny. It was, you know, I wouldn't trade it. I mean, I would love to have gotten a tour right away. Don't get me wrong. It would have made my 40s a lot easier. But, you know, those are memories you can't give up, and you definitely learn from them.
And then when you get out to the web.com tour, I think it was probably nationwide then, but in 04 and you played there from 06, what did you gain as a player from playing against that level of competition? And how much better are those guys versus the guys on the mini tour? Is it a fine line between the difference, or is there a pretty good gap between it?
Well, it's depth. I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, you're starting 156 on the web, and you know, you're starting 156 on, let's just say, any tour you want. You know, any mini tour you want, say you start 156 there, well, you probably only have to beat 35 guys in that mini tour event. In a web event, you got to beat 150. So the depth of play out there is where it's at. And I don't think that tour gets enough credit for teaching guys how to go low. Like, you really need to shoot some low numbers on that tour. So it gets kind of guys who may be afraid when they get 4, 5, 6 under to go 9 or 10. And it gets them out of that, you know, scared stage.
And then you do your time on that tour. You graduate playing the PGA Tour in 07 and 08. Has to be a dream come true. Then what's the difference you see when you're first out there on the PGA Tour versus the web? How big of a difference is that? Or is that line of still, you know, I mean, the fields are deep in both tours. Once again, a fine line? Or is the guys on the PGA Tour noticeably better?
Well, it's funny. It's the golf courses. The tour, the PGA Tour from the web tour, it's the golf courses, without a doubt. I mean, the golf courses are so much more difficult. You can never shortside yourself. I mean, Phil's a magician and everyone watches him. Well, he's arguably got the best short game in the world. So, you know, he can shortside himself, but, you know, the rank and file out here, we can't be shortsiding ourselves and, you know, making a living. But, and then out here, it's just every week you better bring it. There's no coasting. Like, on the web, you can kind of coast a little bit if you get the right golf course and, like, okay, I know I'm going to shoot 400 or 500 because I'm going to get the 4 par 5s no matter what. Out here, you got to bring it every day, every shot, and you can't fall asleep.
Was there ever a moment when you were first on the PGA Tour, and I mean, I'm sure it's not there now, but were you ever just in awe of another player where you said to yourself, holy cow, you know, this guy, I've never seen something this good or a shot. I didn't even see that golf shot, and yet this player pulled that off. Wow.
No, not really, because, I mean, I'm probably a bad person to ask because Tiger and I are the same age. So, I saw Tiger in junior golf and amateur golf, college golf, and all that, and he was hitting those shots then. So right. It wasn't, he's arguably the best of our generation, and him and I just happen to be the same age. So I was able to, like, I was never wowed by the moment on the PGA Tour. Because of that, probably because of that reason.
That he was just that good in college, too, or the other events?
Yeah, I mean, he was good, and then anytime you played with him, I mean, he hit shots, you're just like, hey, okay, I can't do that. So, I mean, when someone else on the tour does it, you're just like, hey, okay, whatever. I mean, like nowadays, I mean, I can't hit it, I can't launch it like DJ and Rory do, and you just sit there and like, yeah, I wish I could do that, but, you know, can they hit a wedge as close as I do every time?
Right,
so,
right. You have strengths as well.
Yeah, you take the good and bad, and, you know, I mean, I wish I could hit a 4-iron to the moon off a downslope like Rory can, but, you know, I can't do it, so, well.
Well, speaking of that, when you went back out to the web playing it from 09 to 16, and some PGA Tour events mixed in there with it as well, did you sort of see the evolution of the young golfer where the younger kids were coming out and just blistering this thing and they're bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Did you sort of, you kind of lived through that and did you kind of see it happening firsthand?
I call it the Tiger effect. Like, Tiger made golf two things. He made it lucrative and it was okay to play golf if you were the high school tight end. You know, you had the build of a high school tight end. You were 6'2", 200 pounds. Your high school football career, you're going to go out and be the tight end or the outside linebacker, and then you're probably not going to play in college because you're not fast enough. But you have that build, that football build, you know, that kind of long, lean, muscular. And I think you just got a different athlete playing golf now. I think a lot of the stuff is being made of the ball and you know, the club heads and all this. And I don't think enough credit is going into that there is a different athlete that plays golf now.
And I agree. But do you also, I mean, I'm 45, I'm a few years older than you are, but I mean, I'm assuming you were raised like I was and with a, you know, a little wood. And we start off playing golf as a kid. I mean, you're taught,
yeah,
you know, hit it easy, let the club do the work. And remember the blot of balls,
right?
We're taught to hit a little low hook. So it took the spin off of it. I wonder, on top of being better athletes, has that equipment changed? I mean, I'm teaching my kids now. And
huge.
Hit as hard as you can
without
and we'll figure it out later.
Without a doubt. We were taught to hit down on the golf ball.
Yes.
Yep. Trap it and, you know, cause it to rise through spin. Now it's like your launch angle is so different. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Jim McClain. This might have been 6 or 7 years ago I ran into Jim. And I was like, Jim, it's almost like there's two swings now. there's like a 7-iron through wedge swing where you still hit it the same way you did back growing up. You know, I'm aging myself a little bit, but, and I go, and then there's like a 6-iron and upswing where we're trying to just launch it as high as we can with no spin. And he's just like, you're exactly right. That's what technology has brought us. Like, our launch angles have had to change. And that's probably been the most difficult thing for me in this whole 6, 7, 8 year process of equipment changing, is the launch angle on those, you know, driver, 3-wood, 5-wood, 4-irons, those type of clubs, trying to switch that launch angle from trapping it to, you know, getting a positive launch angle.
There's no question. I think, you know, we're probably of that last of that generation where, you know, we played essentially not much different equipment that was in the 60s. And I mean, like I said, it's a different, you know, just for my amateur game, like, it's just, I hit a little low draw, but I'm too old to change it. And I'm an amateur. The difference to that is you're seeing with the young generation, I think they're going to even hit it further. You're going to eventually see a guy who's 6'7" out there with a great move, who's going to hit the ball 350 yards consistently.
I agree. Totally.
It's going to happen.
Because it's just the way it's changing. I mean, and it's so much more. There was only a handful of guys, and they, you know, and I don't want to, like, downgrade generations or anything, but there were only a handful of guys in Mr. Nicklaus's era who actually used the ground as force. He was one of them. Ben Hogan was another. Well, that wasn't very predominant. Like, if you look back at old swings, they didn't, like, come up from the ground. You know, everyone kind of hit down on it. That's the way we learned. And, you know, everyone now is learning from the ground up. Like, you know, we're going to hit this as high and as hard as we can, and we'll worry about straight later. If you hit it far, I'll figure out how to hit it straight for you.
Yeah, and the equipment allows for it. The ball just doesn't curve as much. So,
yeah, you're right.
With that, and all the experience you have now, and let's assume you're playing some of the best golf of your life, and you've sort of gotten your swing to a point where you're utilizing the modern equipment a little bit better. What do you think it's going to take for you, or what do you have to keep working on to get that second win and to keep playing some really, really solid golf in your 40s?
I think over the next few years, it's still vital that we still work on the lower body action. Like we were talking about the launch angles. I mean, that's constantly what we're working on, is to try and get that ball elevated to just be able to attack certain, you know, more pins. Cause we figured out, like, I have between 165 and 185 yards a lot on the PGA Tour, whereas DJ is going to have between 135 and 150 yards a lot. So he knows where to, you know, that's his scoring range, you know? And so, I mean, we're concentrating hard on those 7, 6, and 5 irons, getting those elevated just a little bit more to get those, you know, to make the 20 footer become 16 to 14 feet because of that height. It sits down a little quicker, and it allows me more opportunities to make putts. And I've always said, if you give me, you know, if I hit 14 or 15 greens, and if I have, you know, 7 to 10 birdie looks, which to me a birdie look is 20 feet and in, I'm going to play good that day. I mean, that's where it is right there. I'm going to, you know, it's, the strength is in the numbers. And, you know, if you give someone opportunity after opportunity, they're going to, you know, make a few. So, and, you know, I think that's where we're really stressing. I mean, we're not neglecting any other part of the game, but that's where we're kind of focusing our energy to really, really try and improve.
Are you working out as hard as you've ever worked out as well?
You know, I'm not a gym rat. But, you know, I did that probably when I played my worst golf of my career. I was hitting the gym pretty hard. And I felt great waking up. I felt great going to the beach.
Right.
I didn't feel real good on the golf course. And so I kind of went away from using weights and all that stuff. And I went more to a cardio. I try and run anywhere between 10 and 15 miles a week at a minimum, and then do some core work. I don't, you know, but no weights. I do have some kettlebells at home that I'll do some stuff with, but I don't, you know, I don't get in there and pound plates. But, you know, the big thing for me, I think by doing the cardio and I get on these stretches of playing three or four in a row, I don't get fatigued at all. I just found my own little niche. Like, no trainer is going to tell you to go out and, you know, run a 5K. He's not going to tell you to do that. He thinks that means nothing in golf. Well, to each his own. I think you got to find your own path, and this seems to work for me.
Well, my next questions I have are just sort of more quick, whatever comes to your mind. So I'll just kind of fire these at you and let me know what kind of hits you. So, best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
I would probably say Q School 2006 Island Course. Or Island Hole at PGA West 17.
That's a scary one, yeah.
Yeah.
Best golf shot you've ever seen a playing competitor hit that you were playing with?
Wow, that's tough.
If you need me to fire another one at you, I can. We can hold on.
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
All the years of playing professional golf that you're out there, who had the most natural raw talent you ever saw?
Most natural raw?
Yep.
I think Phil. I think Phil's talent is just unbelievable. I mean, he does it his way, and yeah, he had Butch for a long time, but his hand eye and the way he's just a magician from about 120 yards and in. I mean, it's just so cool to watch.
Your favorite event to play on the PGA Tour, and what makes that event such a fun experience for the players to play in?
Well, I love this week. I love Hilton Head. But, you know, going to Ohio State, playing Mr. Nicklaus's event at Memorial, I would have to say Memorial.
Lowest round ever shot could be a tournament round or a non-tournament round.
59, OSU Gray, but 61 on the PGA Tour and 61 on the Web Tour.
All right, I got a few more here for you. You can pick three guys from maybe Champions Tour or PGA Tour to go out and play a money game with, a couple drinks and dinner afterwards. Which three guys are you taking to make your foursome, and what do you admire about those guys the most?
I just got to go back to – I played practice rounds with these three guys for three straight years, almost five straight years, actually. Johnson Wagner, Brant Snedeker, and Brennan DeYoung, and we had – some epic battles on Tuesdays, and you know, just kind of family has gotten in the way where we don't play too many practice rounds together anymore. You know, some guys are flying in Tuesday night, some guys are flying in Wednesday morning, some guys get in Monday night, so the schedule kind of never matches up. But we used to have some battles on Tuesdays.
Well, my next one is from the attorney Ryan Armour. He got this email after you won the Sanderson. So I don't know if you know this person.
Oh,
this literally came to him. I won't give out the phone number or anything, but this is from Don Lilly. Enjoyed watching you this weekend. We are all proud of you. Hope your family is doing well. Looking forward to seeing you at the Greenbrier. Do you know who Don Lilly is?
Don Lilly used to be a broker for Mutual of Omaha, who I endorsed for 10 years. And he comes to Greenbrier every year, and he... So what we used to do in this Mutual of Omaha program, we would host groups with other brokers and, you know, their clients. And Don was always there and avid golfer. And we see him at Greenbrier every year. And he always comes up and says hi to kind of the old guys that endorsed him, like me, Jason Bone, Ogilvy, you know, that crew. He always remembers us and he always comes up to say hi.
Well, if you see Don, tell him the email went to the attorney in Rockford, Illinois, and not the PGA Tour winner. You got
will.
A couple of those, actually, when you won, so we thought we had to throw one of those in there for this interview.
Mm-hmm.
We got two more to go. The two or three most interesting people you have gotten to meet because of the game of golf, not necessarily golfers, but because of what the game has brought you, of just some really interesting people.
That's interesting. You know, about 10 years ago, I got to play with President Trump. I mean, how can you not put if you get to spend the day on a golf course with a future president, you got to put him in there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You know, just coming to mind, I mean, there are some really neat people, and I wish I could offhand talk about them in the business world that I've met that are just amazing. But, you know, just at Pebble, I played with Larry Fitzgerald, who, you know, I don't throw this word around lightly. He might be the classiest athlete I've ever met. And I mean, just when I played with him at Cypress Point and I was a guest of Peter Barker, who's my AM partner out there. I've never seen members like walk three fairways over just to say hi to someone. Like that's how well liked he is at that club. And, you know, they just wanted to come over and say hi to him and say, hey, welcome back. It's great to have you. And I thought that said a lot that, I mean, Cypress has a lot of power. There's a lot of power at that club. And these guys are going out of their way, walking two, three, four fairways over to say hi to someone.
I've been fortunate enough to play it. I know you and I were going back and forth on Twitter between Pebble and Cypress, but how good is that walk at Cypress Point? It is, oh my gosh, it's one of the best days I've ever had in my life.
A lot of golf courses to me, when I get to them, are overrated. That one did not disappoint.
No.
It was really, really cool. And I think that 14th hole coming up through the trees might be my favorite hole in golf.
Yeah, it's, dude, you go play Pebble and play Cypress in the same weekend, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Which actually brings me to my last question, which you may have answered one already, but in your opinion, what's the best three golf courses you've had a chance to play anywhere in the world, and what makes those courses so great architecturally?
Pebble is, to me, the best golf course I've ever played. And the reason is anyone can play it. There's no... It's amazing how Pebble, if it gets the right weather, the right firmness, how at 6,900 yards, it can still play just brutally tough. And I think that's a testament to small greens, which architects have gone away from. I think it's a testament to how weather plays a factor in what we do. I mean, it's an outdoor sport and you got to play it in the elements. And I think a lot of it has to do with the history of Pebble for me. When you think back, there's very few courses that have hosted as many good players as Pebble Beach has over the last 100 years. I mean, just the amount of good players that have teed it up Sunday at Pebble, whether it be in a U.S. Amateur, U.S. Open, or the Bing Crosby, or, you know, now the AT&T, is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I kind of equate it like walking through. It's like walking through a museum. Like you've seen the hole so many times, and you just stand out there, like, yeah, there's eight. You know, there's seven. There's nine. There's 17. It actually looks like it should look. I kind of like, you play golf, but it's a day. If you haven't played it for the first time, it's like you're sort of walking through a living museum. It's incredible.
Yeah.
The other two.
So that's my favorite. You know, I've never really got past the number one. So, God, there's so many good golf courses.
You play Pine Valley,
I have not played Pine Valley. I haven't played Augusta. You know, but Pebble up there is special to me. Cypress is special. I mean, it's really, really cool. You know, Scioto is special to me in Columbus. But they're special for different reasons, you know.
Right.
And, you know, growing up in Ohio and knowing Mr. Nicklaus grew up there, and it's an old Donald Ross course that still plays brutally hard. Just really, really cool environment. Inverness up in Toledo is an unbelievable golf course. Firestone South, you know, I'm just trying to think of courses I've played enough of, not just one round at, you know. And you know, there's just so many good ones out there.
Yeah, it's hard to pick, and they all have their attributes. So I totally hear where you're coming from. Well, if you think of the best golf shot you ever saw anyone else hit, by all means, if it hasn't hit you yet, just let us know, and we'll put it out there on Twitter.
I got to think about that.
I can't thank you enough for your time today. And like I said, it's truly been a pleasure, you know, with watching the career and getting that win. And it should be a great week for you this week. I imagine that golf course at RBC sets up really well for you. So play well. Yeah, we'll be watching you. And hopefully when you get that second win on tour, we can get a follow-up with you and come on for 10 or 15 minutes and let us know how that victory was. So we'd love to have you back on.
All right. Thanks, Chase. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Play well this week.